Hello, I'm Tom Weber, and this is an NPR News special. We're looking back on the death this year in a quiet corner of the Twin Cities suburbs that reverberated across the globe.
This is an NBC News special report.
Good day. We are coming on the air with breaking news about the death of an American music
icon. CNN has now confirmed Prince, that the artist Prince,
the musician is dead. Prince, yeah, one of the most inventive music makers of his
we
era, has
the
died.
News of a death at Paisley
Park.
2016 will be remembered for many historic things, both globally and here in Minnesota.
We can now project the winner of the presidential race.
Another day, more violence in Aleppo.
We start this morning with breaking news in the Jacob Wetterling investigation.
Well, at 20 minutes to 5, we can now say the decision taken in 1975 by this country to join the common market has been reversed by this referendum to leave the EU.
This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series. Bryant makes the play. It's over. And the Cubs have finally won it all.
But we also have to remember 2016 for the deluge of talented, generation-defining musicians who died. David Bowie, Leonard Cohen, Sharon Jones, George Michael, Merle Haggard, Fife Dog, and that's not even a complete list. And this hour, we focus on Prince. We go back to the weeks leading up to April 21st, remind you the effect his death had internationally, and look at all that's happened since his death. Tribute concerts, Paisley Park becoming a museum, and many still unknown questions about his estate. So here we go. A few weeks before 2016 arrived, Prince released his 39th album, Hit and Run Phase 2. It would be his last. Prince always spoke out where he saw injustices. His history with record companies and becoming the artist formerly known as Prince is worth a whole other hour on this show. Earlier in 2015, he had said a lot with just one simple line while presenting an award at the Grammys.
Albums still matter. Like books and Black Lives, albums still matter. Tonight and always.
And this album included the song Baltimore, his treatment on Freddie Gray, who died while in police custody.
Does anybody hear us pray for Michael Brown or Freddie Gray? Peace is more than the absence of war.
Prince had debuted the song in Baltimore in May of 2015 at a quickly announced benefit concert after Gray's death. And here was the song having the top spot on what would be his final album. A final album, by the way, that had been his fourth released in less than a year and a half. Publicly, Prince was about to embark on a much quieter tour, a piano and microphone tour. A reporter for The Guardian said in a story last November that the tour was a middle-of-the-night idea for Prince, who also told a small gathering of reporters at Paisley Park that he was doing it to challenge himself, quote, like tying one hand behind my back, not relying on the craft that I've known for 30 years. I won't know what songs I'm going to do when I go on stage. I really won't. I won't have to because I won't have a band. The tour was called, fittingly, Piano and a Microphone. It started in January at Paisley Park when he surprised attendees of one of his last-minute concerts at his recording studio with the intimate format that drew rave reviews. He did shows in Australia and New Zealand, then to Oakland, Montreal, and Toronto in February and March. Just before that Montreal show, Prince was in New York at a nightclub where he announced that he would write a memoir called The Beautiful Ones. The good people of Random House have made me an offer I can't refuse, he said, according to a story in The New Yorker. You all still read books, right? The publisher scheduled a fall 2017 release. It was a month before his death, and Prince showed no outward signs of easing up. In early April, Piano and a Microphone headed to Atlanta, where Prince quickly sold out two shows for April 7th, at the 4,600-seat Fox Theater. Then, day of, he postponed, citing the flu. The announcement from the Fox Theater concluded with the line, Prince is looking forward to giving his Atlanta fans the best show they have experienced. The shows did happen a week later, April 14th at 7 and 10 o'clock. Prince, sitting at a piano with mood smoke in the air and candles on stage, opened the first show with a medley of Little Red Corvette, and Dirty Mind, which somehow transformed into the Peanuts theme of Linus and Lucy. He did apologize at one point for having to postpone the show, but he didn't talk much during the concerts. He didn't sing Purple Rain during the first show, but did in the second. And people at either show indicated later in media interviews there was no hint of anything wrong. Later that night, he boarded a private plane in Atlanta with just two people aboard, Grammy-winning singer and protege Judith Hill and Kirk Johnson, a longtime friend and aide to Prince. We know this because Hill spoke to the New York Times after Prince died. The plane left at 12:51 a.m. About an hour later, Prince and Hill were eating dinner, vegetables and pasta, discussing the night's show and photography, one of Prince's hobbies, when he lost consciousness. His eyes fixed, Hill told the Times, before he nodded off across the table. She adds that if she hadn't been looking right at him at the moment, she might have thought he innocently dozed off. But she shook him, and he didn't wake up. She alerted Johnson, who also couldn't wake Prince, and they told the pilot, who made this distress call to air traffic controllers in Chicago.
Airport's the same for Jet Speed 990.
Jet Speed 990, clear visual approach to the Quad City Airport.
Clear for visual, Jet Speed 990.
What's the nature of the emergency? What's the nature of the
An unresponsive passenger.
Do you know male, female, age, anything?
I do not know that. The West here was getting some of that. He told me unresponsive passenger. That's
okay.
All I got out of the West.
Got it. Okay.
The plane was diverted to Moline, Illinois, one of the Quad Cities along the Mississippi River between Iowa and Illinois. It's less than an hour's flight from Minneapolis, and they landed unscheduled at 1:35 in the morning for a medical emergency for an unresponsive person, according to an airport manager. Paramedics met them and revived Prince on the tarmac with a shot of Narcan, which is used to treat opioid overdoses. He was then taken to the hospital, where he stayed for a few hours before leaving. To quote the Times article, Ms. Hill felt that Prince had suffered a close call, one that wouldn't be repeated. He was very cooperative that whole night, she said, serious about getting help. But the rest of us didn't know that. Again, Hill didn't speak to the Times until after Prince died. Later that day, Friday, after they'd flown back to the Twin Cities, the official word was that Prince was fine. He felt bad during the Atlanta show because of the flu, then worse on the plane, so he went to the hospital in Moline and was released soon after. Dehydration was another ailment listed, but all in all, the word was the artist was on the mend. Saturday was Record Store Day. It's a national event to promote local music stores and people buying actual albums instead of just online versions. Prince went to Electric Fetus in Minneapolis, bought six CDs. In fact, the last tweet he ever sent was a link to the store's website. That night, there was another pop-up dance party at Paisley Park, doors at 10, and Prince made a brief appearance. Deborah Grant of Minnetonka was one of several hundred people there. She's a lifelong fan who even remembers serving Prince drinks at a downtown Minneapolis bar where she worked several decades ago. In an interview on the day Prince died, Grant said she did wonder about that last appearance.
It was low-key. He just came out. He played chopsticks on his new Yamaha purple piano he had made. He was very proud of it, and like I said, he just came out. He was maybe on stage for 10 minutes. It was very low-key. He looked marvelous because he had an awesome outfit on, of course. But you could tell his voice was really weak when he did talk. He just sounded weak.
Others, though, said there was no indication that anything was wrong. Some even reported that Prince had admonished them about speculation about his health in the press, telling them to, quote, wait a few days before you waste any prayers.
My heart, my head, my mind, my soul, my feelings over you.
On Tuesday night, he went to see this singer, Liz Wright, at the Dakota Jazz Club, another of Prince's frequent haunts. Again, no indications of real problems. But as we learned in that New York Times article with Judith Hill, who was on the plane with Prince, she and others were worried. And it was about this time Prince himself was coming around to the idea of getting help. On Wednesday night, Prince's representatives arranged an initial meeting with a doctor in California who runs a treatment facility called Recovery Without Walls. The doctor's well known for treating opioid treatment, Howard Kornfeld, and he was asked to help Prince deal with a painkiller addiction. That night, he dispatched his son Andrew on a red-eye flight to make first contact. Here's how Minneapolis attorney William Mazzi described it in May. Mazzi represents Dr. Kornfeld.
The hope was to get him stabilized in Minnesota and convince him to come to Recovery Without Walls in Mill Valley. That was the plan.
At 8 that evening, someone dropped Prince off at Paisley Park, where he lived alone. And that was the last time anyone saw him alive. The next morning, Andrew Kornfeld arrived to meet with Prince to talk about going into treatment. It's not clear exactly in which order this happened, but staffers were also there looking for the artist. Eventually, someone found him in an elevator, wearing a black cap, black shirt, gray undershirt, black pants, black boxer briefs, and black socks. The 911 call came in at 9:43 Thursday morning. "We need an ambulance right now. We have someone who is unconscious," said the caller, according to a transcript of the call. "We're at Prince's house," followed by confusion over the exact address there. The caller said, "The person is dead here." "Okay," the dispatcher said. "Get me the address, please." Later on, the caller said, "Paisley Park. We are at Paisley Park." And the dispatcher replied, "You're at Paisley Park. Okay, that's in Chanhassen. Are you with the person who's..." "Yes, it's Prince," the caller said. "Okay," answered the dispatcher. Medics arrived and couldn't revive him. Prince Rogers Nelson was declared dead at 10:07.
Tracy died soon after a long-fought civil war. Just after I wiped away his last tear.
The world was none the wiser 2 hours later as I started doing my show as normal here on NPR News. Toward the end of the hour, during a news break, my colleague, Julie Seipel, came in to tell me the newsroom had learned of reports of a death at Paisley Park. No confirmation who died, and that they would write a few sentences for me to read, which is what I did during the middle of the next interview. This is what I said about 8 or so minutes before noon on April 21st.
I do want to step aside for one moment. I'll come back to Krista in this conversation. I just want to read a quick news item here that I've been handed. The Carver County Sheriff's Office says deputies are on the scene of a death investigation at Paisley Park. That's the recording studio of Prince. There is no information on the identity of the dead person, whoever has died. There is no information on who that is. You might remember last week, Prince's plane reportedly made a stop in Illinois because the singer was suffering from flu-like symptoms. His team had said he'd been battling the flu for a few weeks, but said it was all good after his hospitalization. Again, we're following this story.
Around the time I read that, the website TMZ had posted a story saying Prince had, in fact, died. But no one else was reporting it. Was it real? It started blasting through social media. But was it real? Take a moment, if you remember that day, to remember that 10 to 15 minutes when word was spreading, but we didn't know for sure. There was that short period of, is this real? Do you recall those few minutes? I remember spending them going back to the interview I was in the middle of. Something about breathalyzer tests in the Supreme Court, and I don't remember anything my guests or I said. I kind of glided on autopilot through the final minutes of the interview. At 12:01, I went off the air. NPR had its hourly newscast, which did not have any Prince news on it, and we gathered right outside the studio in the newsroom. That's where I learned there were people from NPR's sister station, The Current, out at Paisley Park, including Andrea Swenson.
And it looked like Prince had, in fact, died. But again, we didn't have enough confirmation. We don't have the paid sources that TMZ had. We did, though, plan to go live whenever that confirmation came through. That could be at any moment. So I remember using the brief pause for a bathroom break. At 12:07, a friend of mine on Facebook wrote two words for his status. No, please. Begging the social media gods to not let it be true. It was about this time my colleagues at The Current had also been working to confirm the story. They had just played Prince's song, Paisley Park, and then the song Nausea by Beck, before host Jade spoke on air with Andrea Swenson.
There are probably about 30 people gathered outside Paisley Park at the moment, half of which are news media, a lot of people going live on air right now. The closest confirmation that I was able to get myself is through Reg Chapman from WCCO, who was able to confirm with someone close to the situation that Prince has died. So, obviously, everyone here is very upset. There's a lot of fans showing up already, and it's a very somber day here in Chanhassen.
3 minutes later, at 12:10, the Associated Press sent what's called an urgent wire. I still have the printed page at my desk, and we went on air here at NPR News. Good afternoon. I'm Tom Weber here with Minnesota Public Radio News. We're breaking into this program for live coverage of the following news. Pop music superstar Prince has been found dead at his home in suburban Minneapolis. His publicist, Yvette Noel Shore, told the Associated Press that the music icon was found dead at his home today out in Chanhassen. I also immediately got an update from Andrea Swenson.
You know, Prince is important when even the journalists are hugging each other. This is devastating news. We all hoped that it would not be true when we came out here this morning. And unfortunately, we've all been able to report on our own and through the AP that it is true.
When did you first learn of this? When did you head out there, Andrea? It's about 12. It's about 12:20 right now.
I would say I've been here about an hour. I first got the news about 10:30.
And we're getting word from the Associated Press through the publicist Yvette there. Has anyone from Prince's staff or Prince World out there, I guess, come out to talk to you, or is it closed off? I mean, draw the picture for me of wherever it is and how you're getting your information.
Yeah. So as per usual, Paisley Park has gates around it that are closed inside the parking lot. Many police vehicles, SUVs, the medical examiner, the sheriff, all inside. One police officer's been kind of working the ground, taking pictures of everything outside. Everyone that's parked there just kind of surveying the scene. And then across the street is where people have started to gather. So we're at the intersection of the County Road 5 and Audubon Road, which is where Paisley Park is in Chanhassen. And like I said, it's a very somber mood, a lot of people comforting each other as we just all kind of work through this news together. I was able to confirm myself through actually someone you and I interviewed, Tom, together, Bobby Z.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously this news is getting its way out through, you know, Prince's World and beyond, and everyone's just grappling with the fact that Prince is gone.
The quirky thing about breaking news is you only have one piece of information, and you're expected to talk for hours on end. A few details are added throughout the day. He died there at Paisley Park. He was found in an elevator, but no cause of death. The hours filled up, though, because we opened the phones to people in the audience to reflect on what Prince's death meant to them.
Now, I've been a big fan of his since I grew up in Texas.
Yeah.
Way before Purple Rain, I was a fan. My grandmother once called me at my room gym, and I was supposed to be listening to gospel music, and she walked in, and she goes, "Baby, is that gospel music? What are they saying?" And it was controversy. And I looked at her really quick, and I went, "Oh, yes, ma'am, they're saying count your blessings."
I actually went to high school, graduated from high school with Prince from Minneapolis Central. And Mrs. Speed was our choir director, and Mrs. Speed and Dr. Jackson recognized the talent that was there. I wasn't into pop music, so I had to be kind of convinced that, yeah, he was really something. I mean, he seemed like a regular guy. He Prince and Dwayne Nelson, kind of, you know, Mutt and Jeff, they just went everywhere they were together. They were in basketball and football together, and, you know, it was like he was just like a regular guy to me.
I am just remembering my lifeline is actually connected to, you know, my growing up is connected to Prince, and all of the music has been landmarks for me, whether it's in 1984 being a freshman in high school and listening to it in Ely, Minnesota at Camp Du Nord up until 1990 when I was in one of the worst movies ever, which was Graffiti Bridge, but still being able to partake in that whole process and being a part of it and knowing that, you know, having that touched my life.
Lori is on the phone in Oakland. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Tell me your thoughts here today.
Oh, I'm heartbroken. I saw the news and I thought for sure it couldn't be true. And then I looked and dug and, I still am trying to believe it.
I have a note here, Lori, that you were in Purple Rain.
Yeah, I was 15 at the time. I kind of snuck off to the tryouts, so to speak. We were all lined up outside and we filled out our forms on each other's backs. I didn't think I'd make it into the movie, but I did.
Victoria is in St. Paul. Hi, Victoria.
Well, good morning.
Go right ahead.
All right. Well, I'm a St. Paul Central graduate, and I was on the prom committee back in 76, and we were looking for a band, and we hired Prince when he was Prince in Grand Central Station. Prince on guitar, Linda Anderson on keyboards, Andre Simone Anderson, Simone's his middle name and used it for his stage name later when he produced Jody Watley, but Andre Simone on bass, and Sylvia Anderson made all of their costumes, and I believe the older Anderson was Edward, and he was their manager and booking agent, and they played our prom.
So you're saying Prince played prom at St. Paul Central High School?
Yep. It wasn't. I can't remember the venue was where we held it, but for our St. Paul Central prom back in 76, they were the band, Grand Central Station.
What was great about Prince is he worked with a lot of women, and he gave a lot of women opportunities and positions. Women usually don't get positions, which I think is really exciting. I'm a musician here in Minneapolis, and I produce and direct Le Cirque Rouge Cabaret and Burlesque Show, which I would not do if it weren't for Prince. I moved to Minneapolis after seeing Purple Rain when I was 15 years old to be a musician. And so, and the impact he had on all of us here as musicians in Minneapolis, it's as if he led us all into doing what we weren't sure we could do. But by seeing him and being a part of the scene and as involved as he was in creating the Minneapolis music scene, you know, it was just fantastic place to grow up as a musician.
He was truly a genius. He could write, arrange, play multiple instruments, and my heart stopped when I saw the headline, so I just called to say that.
Over on our sister station, The Current, they shifted their day to playing Prince music nonstop. They started with The Beautiful Ones and just kept going. The Current became kind of a thing because so few radio stations keep a complete catalog on hand. They'll have big hits for an artist, but The Current had so much of Prince's catalog. You might remember they'd done a Purple Snow Marathon just last year as soon as an inch of snow was reported to have fallen in Chanhassen. And his music was not on many streaming services. So as people across the world were looking for a place to hear Prince's music, they logged on and found The Current to be almost the only game in town. NPR had to increase the number of servers offering The Current because we broke through capacity. Streaming traffic was about 15 times the normal day, and people were streaming from more than 200 countries. Guess what it told me?
I'm listening.
It said, Rosie.
What?
Just wanna have fun no matter what you do.
You wanna tell me why?
The songs kept coming, and so did the tributes, like this one from producer Jimmy Jam.
I had obviously kept up a little bit with the, the health problem that had happened last week with the, in Moline, Illinois. But I just assumed that everything was, fine. And I know that he, did a chat as they I think they call it over the weekend at Paisley Park. So I assumed he was recovering and doing better. So it was obviously, kind of devastating news. And I think everybody is just trying to process it here at this point. His legacy is going to be across the board, certainly as a trendsetter, certainly as someone that, really pushed boundaries, broke boundaries, did all those things. For me personally, the biggest thing that rubbed off on me was just his work ethic. He was always the person that was the most talented person in the room, but he was also the hardest working person in the room. I always use Michael Jordan as an analogy, as someone, as a basketball player who didn't have to work hard if he didn't want to because he already had all the talent in the world, but then went and outworked everybody. And that combination is it's very rare in really in any pursuit, whether it's, athletics or academia or music or whatever that may be. But I thought Prince definitely exemplified that. And you said virtuoso guitar player. He was a virtuoso drummer. He was a virtuoso bass player. Everything he picked up, he was good at. He was amazing at it. And then he'd have the funny thing. It would be like if it was a bass player, and he would take the bass from the bass player, teach him how to play the part, hand the bass player back the bass, and it would be like the bass player would feel like all of a sudden they never knew how to play bass. It was amazing, and I watched that happen a few times. It happened to me a few times. I fancied myself as a drummer. When I was earlier in my life, I played with my dad. I was like 12 or 13 years old. Thought I was a pretty good drummer. And I remember we were at a talent show thing. I got up off the drums. I went to the bathroom. I heard somebody playing the drums. I assumed it was the music teacher. We had a music teacher named Mr. Hamilton. This was at Central High School back in the day, Minneapolis Central. And I came back in, and it was Prince on the drums. And just absolutely, like, I didn't even want to get behind the drum set anymore. He was that good. So... But I just think that for me, just his incredible legacy is just going to be one of really moving things forward, breaking down barriers, and not only musically, but also, if you think about the changes in the way that music business is, and the fact that people put out music at a much higher rate. It's not the traditional put out an album and wait a year and put out another album. It's like you constantly are putting music out. You're putting it out on your own, websites or your own social media in many cases. And in many cases, you also are the owners of your masters. And those are things that he really fought for to really change the way that, music was consumed and distributed. So I think that will be part of his legacy also.
Hey, you guys.
You're listening to an NPR News special looking back on the death this year of Prince. I'm Tom Weber. As the news spread across the globe that afternoon, plans quickly came together here at NPR and at First Avenue to put together a concert right outside the music venue in downtown Minneapolis.
How about we just make this the loudest party ever? Let's do it!
And it happened, with thousands of people heading to 7th Street right outside First Ave in the shadow of the Target Center, to mourn and hear Minnesota musicians perform Prince songs.
Sometimes I feel like I'm gonna die. So if you don't come and say, Lord, how I try. I'm down on my knees to begging you to come.
After the concert, which ended with a big Purple Rain ensemble, First Ave then stayed open with an all-night dance party. Tributes also were happening all over the world. City halls, fountains, bridges, buildings, all being lit in purple. Author and entrepreneur Van Jones, who also worked briefly in the Obama White House and is now a CNN commentator, became friends with Prince after Jones left, or was made to leave, his job at the White House. Jones said this on CNN that night to host Don Lemon's question.
As a friend and a loved one, what are you guys dealing with today?
Just guilt. Feeling like, what could we have done? What happened? And just feeling like, now people will start talking and you'll start hearing. You know, he was such a private person that people in the inner circle and everybody got on TV and said anything. In fact, if you got on TV bragging about you know Prince, you're gonna not, you ain't gonna know Prince tomorrow because he doesn't like that. So now you're gonna hear all these people coming out, oh, he mentored me, he helped me. Like I said, he was there for us when we were down. Mm. When I left the White House, he was the first person to call. Al Gore called me and he called me. And he said, come over. He had me come to his house, Don. And he sat me down. I was just feeling so low. And he looked at me and he said, why are you so sad? I said, well, because I had this great job. I was working in the White House. I was doing good things. He said, you're going to do good things again. He said, let me tell you what you do, Van. He said, go to Jerusalem. Stay there for 2 weeks and pray. Mm. He said, then when you come back, sit down and give me a blank piece of paper and you write on it everything that you want to do that you think will help the community. And I will help you do it. Okay? So I went from working for a president to working with Prince. And every single thing that I said, I said, we've got to go to Chicago and do something about violence. We did 3 concerts in Chicago, Don, 3. And every community group there he brought in. And he didn't let there were no vendors, only community groups to help. We went to Baltimore. He went to New Orleans. There were so many things that he did. Those concerts that he was doing were a cover for him to be able to go into cities and help organizations and help leaders and touch people.
On Broadway, the casts of Hamilton and The Color Purple sang tributes after their shows. Audience members recorded them, uploaded the soon viral videos to YouTube. Here's the cast of The Color Purple singing, well, you know. The next day, Friday the 22nd, the tributes continued. Chanhassen, Minnesota remained the center of the world. And in the afternoon, the Carver County, Minnesota Sheriff, Jim Olson, held a news conference.
This is a tragedy for all of us. To you, Prince Rogers Nelson was a celebrity. To us, he's a community member and a good neighbor.
At the event, we also started to learn details of what happened to Prince.
Staff members from Paisley Park had been unable to contact Prince yesterday morning and went to check on him. They found him unresponsive and called 911. There were no obvious signs of trauma on the body at all.
But many answers, like how he died, were still unknown.
Sheriff James, go ahead. From BBC News.
Yes.
Are you able to confirm whether Prince was taking any medication at the time of his death?
I am not able to confirm that at this time at all.
Sheriff Olson noted everything would be investigated. Sure. Medical records, the emergency landing in Illinois, all of it. As Olson spoke, just a short distance away at Paisley Park, Prince's home and the place where he died was becoming a must-go place to pay respects. It would remain so for weeks, with people coming from across the world, leaving purple balloons and flowers and signs on the fence. One sign read, "Beloved Prince, as a lonely teen, you made me believe it was okay to be different. As a young adult, you reminded me to be my authentic self. Your compassion and kindness have not gone unnoticed. Yet another lesson from you. You are missed dearly. Rest in peace." It's interesting, the little subtle things that happened in those days after that we all individually remember. I remember being at Paisley Park a few days later, and one of the things left as a tribute was a small troll doll with purple hair and a toy guitar sitting at the base of a tree near the fence where other people were leaving their words. The car company Chevy ran a memorable full-page ad in Friday's newspapers, in the Strib and in the New York Times. Black background, the top of a red Corvette at the bottom of the ad, and the top in white letters, "Baby, that was much too fast." The New Yorker's cover had no words on it other than the magazine's name. Just a cover, purple in color, with raindrops drawn throughout the page. The singer D'Angelo sang a tribute on The Tonight Show with Maya Rudolph and Gretcha Lieberum, who make up the Prince cover band Princess. There was that moment when D'Angelo just...
I often dream of heaven, and I know that Prince is there.
He's found another friend.
Maybe he's found the answer to
to all the April snow.
In the following weeks, tributes continued. There was a private service for Prince's family. He broke records in music sales as well. And there was legislation in Minnesota called the Prince Bill, introduced to protect copyrights and imagery for Prince in death. It did not pass, but we could see that debate return next year. And while we waited for the full results of his autopsy, we also learned Prince left no will. And that set up a very complicated legal dance over his estate, which includes all that unreleased material we've heard so much about in this vault at Paisley Park. We'll have more on the legalities a little later. On June 2nd, we learned what killed Prince. In those weeks leading up to that date, there'd been more talk about opioid addiction or overdose, perhaps an addiction to painkillers. Performer Sheila E. had spoken in interviews of Prince's bad hips from years of dancing and gyrating and jumping off stages wearing heels or other less than sensible for jumping shoes. Might painkillers have been sneaking into his life? Again, keep in mind that interview with Judith Hill, who was on the plane when Prince fell unconscious that night, the one where she talks about people in his circle being worried about addiction, that interview had not yet run in the New York Times. So on June 2nd, there were inklings but no official word. And also keep in mind, people were trying to process the potential of a drug overdose with the famously clean life with healthy food and no drugs and alcohol that Prince led as a Jehovah's Witness. The autopsy came from Midwest Medical Examiner's Office in Ramsey, the private company that contracts with counties, including Carver, to perform the duties of a medical examiner. I was live on the radio when the autopsy came in, and Dr. Charles Reznikoff from HCMC was my guest, and I read him the findings.
It says, type of death accident, cause fentanyl toxicity. Is that it, Dr. Reznikoff?
Yeah, that's it.
And so the descendant self-administered fentanyl. So that's basically saying in fancy words what we've been talking about here today.
Fentanyl?
Fentanyl.
Okay.
What do you hear there?
Fentanyl is a very important opioid. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. In other words, not grown from poppy plants, but made in a laboratory. It is given to patients in a few forms, in IV forms if they're going to surgery or if they're in the intensive care unit, they may get IV fentanyl. But besides that, it's given to people who are not hospitalized in the form usually of a patch. And the patch is you put it on your skin, and over the next 3 days, it slowly absorbs through your skin into your body. Here's the problem with fentanyl. The FDA has put many warnings out about fentanyl used for pain because of this sort of thing. There are many issues with fentanyl patches. If you have a fentanyl patch on your body and you develop, for example, develop a fever, the rate of absorption of fentanyl increases and you may overdose because the fever of your skin draws more drug into your system. That's just one example. So these are very, very, fentanyl is one of the most important potent, very potent opioids that is the cause of a lot of these deaths, sadly. So fentanyl is a little, I'm going to use colorful language.
Yeah.
Fentanyl is what I call the Ebola of opioids. And the reason I do that, I call it that, is that fentanyl kills you quickly, very quickly, as opposed to many of the other opioids take a long time and are less apt to kill you in overdose. But fentanyl is so potent that any little error with the use of fentanyl leads to death.
Prince's death was an accident, according to the report, caused by a particularly strong type of prescription painkiller.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to an NPR News special looking back on the death this year of Prince. I'm Tom Weber. I mentioned earlier we'd come back to the legal twists that are still being pulled apart in the wake of Prince not having a will. We're at that part of the show now. Matters of Prince's estate are largely being hashed out in court, and first on the to-do list is raising cash.
Tens of millions of dollars are needed to pay a tax bill that's coming due very soon in the new year. Emma Nelson and Dan Brown are covering all the intricacies of Prince's estate for the Star Tribune. And when I spoke with them in August, the judge in the case had just allowed some of Prince's properties to be put up for sale. Emma speaks here first.
Bremer Trust, which is kind of overseeing the estate for the time being, Bremer was Prince's bank. So they are trying to, what they have been saying a lot is monetize the estate or maximize the value of it in order to collect money for that tax bill. And so basically they needed permission to start selling these properties. And he has quite a lot of property in the Chanhassen area, but also overseas. We wrote about a villa in Turks and Caicos that is worth quite a lot of money. And so the judge said that they could sell not even half of what we've seen listed so far.
And not Paisley Park.
Not Paisley Park that we know of. That caused quite a scare.
And not the Purple Rain House in Minneapolis. No. But what you're saying is, because you hear this, and so, for example, there's a commercial building estimated at $22 million. There's a 156-acre piece of land in Lakes Ann and Lucy valued at $13 million. So if those get sold tomorrow, Dan, I believe what Emma just said is that then raises cash that would be used to pay that big tax bill that's coming. So it's not like that $22 million gets divvied up between the siblings at this point. We're not at that phase yet, are we?
No, we're not. And the Bremer Trust recently filed a claim for approximately $2 million just for their services to date. And so they're operating on a percentage basis plus hourly fees for any extraordinary type things that they have to do. You know, they're going through tens of thousands of documents. They've hired experts within the industry to try to put a value on these states. They're planning, you know, benefit concerts. They're trying to raise money any way they can in a hurry to make a payment.
Monetizing the estate is also why there was that big tribute concert with Stevie Wonder and Chaka Khan and others at the XL Energy Center in St. Paul in October. They need the cash. They also wowed the audience, let's be clear. And it's why Paisley Park has been transformed into a museum. Ticket sales are helping to raise that money. Jay Gabler, a writer and digital producer for The Current, recently spoke with my colleague Phil Picardi about what to expect in the Prince story as we enter the new year, what's left to figure out with the estate, but also questions that remain about Prince's death.
The big mystery surrounds the specific drug that caused his death. We know he did not have a prescription for fentanyl, which was the prescription painkiller that specifically led to his death. So the question is, how did he get it? And did he even really fully understand what he was ingesting? There have been reports that the drug may have been mislabeled. You know, I think there are obvious comparisons to the deaths of Elvis Presley and Michael Jackson. And in both of those cases, you know, artists who died of overdoses of prescription painkillers, you know, we know who the Dr. Nick was, who was supplying those medications. We don't really know who was supplying this medication to Prince. So that's something that still needs to come out as the investigation continues.
And it was known that there were some health issues. He had the incident on the airplane.
Yes.
Coming back from a concert.
Yes, he had there was an airplane that had to make an emergency landing because Prince was losing consciousness. So we know that he had been taking dangerously high doses of these painkillers in the days leading up to his death. And we know that he was seeking help, actively seeking help for his health on the days immediately leading up to his death.
Do we know for sure now who will inherit his estate?
We don't know for 100% certain. The estate is still in probate, and so there's not been a completely final determination made as to who will control the estate, but we have a pretty good idea. Barring any big surprises, the estate will go to his one full sibling, Tyka Nelson, and his five surviving half-siblings, all of whom under Minnesota state law are entitled to an equal share of the estate. There are still some parentage claims that are coming in from near and from very far that will be evaluated via genetic testing. There's the question of the man, Dwayne Nelson, who Prince referred to as his brother during his lifetime, but who seems to not have an actual genetic relationship to Prince. So there are a couple of open questions, but probably it'll be those six siblings who will end up with the estate.
And there was so much speculation about the vault. What is in the vault? What do we know now?
I wish I knew. And we still don't know very much. One song, Moonbeam Levels, has been released.
tried to write a novel, but I didn't know where to begin. So I lay down in the grass, trying to feel the world turn. Boy loses girl in a rainstorm. Nuclear World War III. All that's left is pain and sorrow, as far as he's concerned. He says, peace and love.
But most of what's in the vault remains in the vault. And really, the determination of what is in the vault and what will be released and when it will be released is contingent on what's going to happen to Prince's already released recorded legacy. And this is a man who released a lot of music during his lifetime, but had a famously contentious relationship with the recording industry. And so a lot of the music, even the music that he had released during his lifetime, remains not particularly widely available. And so what you're seeing happen now at the estate is they've signed up with a new publisher, they're negotiating with, well, they're negotiating via lawsuits with the streaming service Tidal, and they're trying to figure out how they can make Prince's music more widely available. And so I think when some of that shakes down and his existing catalog is more widely released, then you'll start seeing more material emerging from the vault.
And what is going on right now at Paisley Park these days? We heard about the whole tour situation. People want to go and see where Prince lived and worked.
Yeah, absolutely. The question might be, what's not happening at Paisley Park right now? The estate and the family did move quite quickly to get Paisley Park open permanently as a museum. And after some, I think what in the grand scheme of things were some fairly minor complications involving zoning and safety issues with the city of Chanhassen, Paisley Park is now permanently open as a museum. And there's additional programming happening there as well. On Thursdays, VIP visitors can record in one of Prince's studios a little snippet of a song. There are dance parties on Friday nights. There are movie showings on Saturday nights. There are brunches on Sunday. And there's a big celebration planned for a celebration of Prince's life and legacy that will happen at Paisley Park over the one-year anniversary of his death. So there's quite a bit happening at Paisley Park right now.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What remaining questions do you have? What are you still curious about the life, the legacy, what we're learning about from Prince?
I think what I'm looking forward to learning more about in the next year and in the years to come, there's not any one particular question that I'm dying to know the answer to, but there are so many stories and details about Prince's life that are starting to come out now. You know, people didn't talk very much about Prince during his lifetime because Prince didn't really love being talked about. It would get back to him and you might not get invited back out to Paisley Park. But now, you know, people are just sharing all their great memories of Prince. They're sharing their stories of creating music with him and just hanging out with him. And we're learning so much more about his creative life and about his life in Minnesota. I think a fuller picture of the very rich musical scene he came from and the scene that he helped to build and contribute to and all of his many connections, everything that happened at Paisley Park, there are just going to be so many great stories and great details that are going to be emerging. I think there's not any one particular thing I want to know about. I'm curious to learn the full picture that's just going to continue to emerge in years to come.
That's Jay Gabler from The Current. That'll do it for our one-hour look back at Prince's death, the months leading up to it, and all that's happened since. We'll continue to stay on these stories next year on NPR News. I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for joining us.
I never meant to call you when you sorrow. I never meant to call you when you pain. I'm the one who wants that night to see you laughing.
beat up, but you can't seem to make up your mind. I think you better close it and let me guide you.